I don't think your mic's on yet. Your mic should be on.
I'm going to turn my mic on.
Oh, no, it's on. I hear you now.
Hello.
Got controls in the back.
All right, cool.
So we've known each other now, I mean, pushing 20 years. You just passed your 10-year anniversary at Microsoft,
yeah.
Which is amazing to me.
Every time my badge works, I am impressed.
Day. Yes. And you are fairly notorious for doing demos without a net.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
And I'm pretty sure this is as least amount of net as I've ever seen you do.
This one's a little rough. This whole talk, let's just lower your expectations now. Because it very likely won't work.
On the other hand, you show us new things, you push against the edge of what's possible, and for me that's very exciting. I hope it is for you too. Please put your hands together for Scott Hanselman.
Hi, friends. So yeah, it has been 10 years at Microsoft last week. And I've been in the industry, though, for 25 years this year. So I still remember what it's like to not work at Microsoft. If you'll recall, I went to Microsoft to open source stuff. That was the whole point. I actually met Scott Guthrie at the Foo Camp, Friends of O'Reilly Camp, the O'Reilly book people. And he was super nice, and he's like, you want to come to Microsoft and do some damage? And we've done some serious damage. And I think we can all agree that as we are pushing this open source rock uphill, that other groups at Microsoft are starting to see the light as well. So it's no longer just a .NET thing. It's no longer just an MVC thing. It's also worth pointing out that we've done this before. You remember 2001 when we open sourced .NET? 3 times ago, we've open sourced this thing before. We called it sharedsource.net. I don't see anyone moving, which means that this did not stick in your mind. Do you know that we did this though? We called it the Microsoft Shared Source, and we open sourced .net, and we gave it to schools. And the idea that people would go and use .net as a learning tool. But there were a couple of things that didn't exist, right? So Git didn't exist. This was the time of CVS. Not the pharmacy. This was SourceForge days, right? People were trying to decide what the right license was, and the world, the open source world, not an OSS world, but an FOSS world, a FOSS world, all about the GPL, which is a kind of a viral license. And we made up our own license, the Microsoft reference permissive, blah, 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 and it was dumb. And we put the source code for .NET available as a zip file. And we said, here, look at that. Don't touch it. Just look at the source code. It's nice. Don't touch, and we're not going to take any of your contributions, right? GitHub didn't exist. So it was not open source. It was source opened. And then we took all the good stuff out. Like the garbage collector and the jitter, and then we made those a naive implementation. I think the garbage collector went from being one of the world's most sophisticated multiprocessor 64-bit implementations of a garbage collector, and we just made it a for loop. And we just said, this is an exercise to the reader. That wasn't really open source. And that's not why I wanted to go to Microsoft, because I really wanted to open source this thing. So we started with ASP.NET MVC. That was .NET on Rails, right? Ruby on Rails was the hotness, and web forms was what I learned on, and then we decided that we were going to do a model view controller implementation. So MVC and folks like Phil Hack went and open sourced that, and we put it on CodePlex, and then that was our first foray. So it has been almost 10 years since we really got serious about open source, right about the time that I showed up, so it was a really good time to arrive. And everything else has been open source since, which is cool. Is it working? Well, we're seeing that .NET Core, that we'll talk about today, is getting 40% of their downloads are by new people. That's the whole point, right? Because who is the audience for .NET Core, right? Is it us? I'm assuming most of us are all established Windows programmers, established .NET programmers. But let's say that I asked you, you all to go out to a high school and teach some kids .NET, some 15-year-olds. Hey, kids, we're going to learn C Sharp. Yay, Microsoft's the best. Let's imagine, it's a fantasy world. Let's just imagine this fantasy world. All right, everybody, hello world in 10 minutes, right? First, we're going to download Visual Studio. It's a 2-gig ISO file. And then tomorrow, when it's installed, we're going to do Hello World. It's going to be awesome. But what are they doing? They're doing Node, and they're doing Python, and they're doing Go, and they're doing Ruby, and they're doing whatever. And they're typing apt get install foo. And then they go run foo, and then they feel happy and excited. So how do we balance the people like us that have been doing this for a few years and the next generation and making sure that we don't become COBOL, right? Well, I think we can do that. I think that we can have slow-moving, reliable enterprise apps, and by slow-moving, I mean they're not changing every week. We can have good, solid WinForms apps, modern WinForms apps that are in the store. We can have modern WebForms apps that use Angular and use dependency injection and have modern techniques. We can have elegant WebForms. We can have sophisticated WinForms. We can have UWP apps. We can have Unity and Monogame. We can do Xamarin and iOS and Android. C#, 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 C#. Some of you, F#, thank you. Some of you may be thinking, well, you know, I've been doing WinForms at big company for 10 years now. I can't do any of that. But you know C#, or you know F#, or you know VB. You know how to write an iPhone app, you just haven't done it yet, because it's not that far apart. So I've been using C# as my again, I'm a C# programmer, but so no disrespect to VB or F#. I use C# as my security blanket as I try these new things. Like, oh, I'm gonna try some Linux. You know, is C# over there? Okay, I'll do that, and I'll try it out and move over there. If we make a lightweight, fast runtime that allows us to do .NET anywhere, then maybe good things will happen. 62% of the contributions to the .NET Core FX are coming from outside of Microsoft. So it's not just Microsoft that's doing this work. You could be doing open source as well. Has anyone here contributed to .NET open source? That's cool. So if you see someone raise their hand next to you, that could be maybe someone that you could talk to. Do you know that all of our docs are open source now? If you want a really great way to contribute to .NET open source, why not go to docs.microsoft.com? When was the last time we celebrated docs being awesome? Seriously, like I worked, remember when I worked at Microsoft originally, I went to work at MSDN. But is the docs team not just killing it lately? Check this out. So I can go up here and I can say, getting started, and look. Do you know that we actually celebrate our contributors? These are the contributors because the docs are on GitHub. That's a really great way for you to become a open source contributor. Very simple formula. Read some docs, find a sling error, fix it, do a pull request, add .NET open source contributor to your resume. Profit. That's basically what I do. If you look at my GitHub contributions, it's mostly just spelling errors. I've been coasting on Charm for 10 years. It's worked quite nicely. And then you would get your face up there. The docs team actually is killing it right now. They're doing some pretty great stuff. And if you actually go to .NET and you go to the .NET API reference, this is just something I wanted to showcase, you can go and put in a Hanselman, hash table. Hanselman's not yet a type. And if you want to know if a certain function or method or type is available, you can go and say, well, I just want the .NET standard 1.6. Is that available to me? Hash table is not. But if I go to .NET standard 2, it is. Just absolutely fantastic. Lots of really cool stuff going on in docs right now. So if we go and we make this fast open source framework, what will happen? Well, no one in South America or Africa will use it. Turns out, though, that they will. Including someone who's either on a boat or a cruise ship. Not really clear what's going on there. New Zealand is gone. They love it so much. They've blanketed. We just need to get Madagascar at this point, and we'll be in a good situation. This is a Power BI dashboard that Jeff Fritz, who's in the front row here, made of GitHub contributions and then weighted them. Like a comment or a spelling error, it would be a low contribution. A pull request of many lines would be a bigger contribution. So then you get bigger and bigger and bigger. So now we're in this interesting world where there are multiple .NETs. There are instances of .NET. .NET isn't just this thing that lives in C, Windows, Microsoft, .NET/framework. There's the .NET framework that runs Windows, runs great. 4.7 is out. There's still improvements being made to that. There's lots of cool stuff going on. If you want to find Jeff, he's here in his green shirt. He can talk to you about some of the cool stuff that we're doing with web forms to make it elegant web forms and practical and modern web forms. A lot of things happening on the Windows side. We just added, configuration with configuration builders. So the same configuration builders that you're used to using in ASP.NET Core are now in web forms. Dependency injection and things like that being thought about? Coming next release. Then you've got another instance of .NET called .NET Core that I'm going to talk about. And then, of course, what's that? Is that a clicker? Oh, you want me to use a clicker? Throw me your clicker. You're so helpful, Jeff. Thank you. Is this my clicker? It's mine now. That's true. It doesn't have. He says it doesn't have my name on it. He knows that because everything that I have has a label. Because I was at Goodwill recently and I bought a label maker. So if you find anything that has my name and phone number on it, it's mine. Okay. Xamarin, who we bought, is the Mono framework, right? So that Mono framework is interesting. Because people want to know, well, what's that mean in a world where there's already multiple .NETs? Well, it's a good thing, because Mono runs in places that we don't. You know, if you want to run on a Wii, or you want to run on a PlayStation 2, you know, Mono is there. If you want to run on an Apple Watch, Xamarin makes that possible. Again, underscoring that point that if you're a .NET developer right now, even though you might be a WinForms developer or a WebForms developer, you could be writing mobile apps, and the barrier to entry is less because you already know this stuff. So we're moving along in time, and you recall that NuGet happened. If we go over to NuGet.org, oh wow, I didn't know we were that close to 5 billion. That's cool. So 95,000 unique packages, almost 5 billion downloaded. And I can go up here and I could search for something like JSON, right? And you can see JSON.NET, which we include and support, has been downloaded almost 90 million times. Remember how you used to find open source before, right? Without a package manager, you're out there, you go and you Google with Bing to find some code. You find a zip file. And then you download it into a lib folder, a loose DLL, and then you go add reference, and then you pick that thing up, and that's your experience. That kind of sucks. And then maybe you got the wrong version, or maybe you didn't get the right one for your platform. But now, I could do something like this. Okay. Well, there's JSON, right? It's available to me anywhere I want. And then there's my NuGet package. And I'm going to do this. This is a useful thing to remember about NuGets. It's one of those things that we know, but we intellectualize, but no one ever really thinks about. Did you know NuGets are zip files? Probably kind of like, yeah, I never thought about it that way. Let's open it up. And look around in here. And look at that. Different versions of NewtonSoft.json for different frameworks. All I have to think about is I use NuGet, and I want to get Newtonsoft.json, and then it comes down, and then I get whatever version is appropriate. And the bottom ones there are portable libraries that I could then use on iOS. But then when we came out with the .NET standard, the .NET standard, of course, isn't a runtime. It's an agreement. It's a standard. So that when someone makes a library like Newtonsoft.json, they can go and say, I'm going to meet this standard or that standard. Remember earlier when I looked for hash table, and we saw that this hash table was available in .NET standard 2. I could then write hash table code in a totally platform agnostic way. I don't have to think about whether I'm on an iPhone or whether I'm on Linux or whether I'm on Windows. And then I could use that code anywhere. So Newtonsoft has gone and made a .NET standard 1.3 version of JSON that I could then use on any platform that supports .NET standard 1.3, right? So let's look at what that means. So if I go back over to the browser and I search for .NET standard, so there you go, .NET standard 1.3 works on framework 4.6, works on Xamarin, works on Android, and doesn't work on Windows 8.1. Well, if I go over to here, he also has a .NET standard 1.0 version of Newtonsoft that might have a little bit less functionality, but then I could use it on Windows or for both of you that have Windows phones. Right? So I just have to think Newtonsoft.json, and I have that great experience. So that's the beginning of having a good experience from an open source perspective. And then the inclusion of that .NET standard, which sits there in the orange, lets me use libraries and open source that sits underneath any one of those things. So if you're writing a library now for your work, I would very much encourage you to do that within the .NET standard. Okay? Let's then think about .NET Core. Now, if I want to get .NET Core and go and teach those kids, those 15-year-olds, how to do .NET, today we are very happy to launch, and we went and bought this URL, and we just relaunched this. This is the URL we bought. Spent a ton of money on that. Hundreds of dollars we bought .NET. Hit .NET, and you go here. This launched last night. This is all new and redesigned. You can say, get started, and download and install .NET in 10 minutes. This is my goal, is to get those 15-year-olds excited. Here's the thing, though. What if those 15-year-olds have a Chromebook? Here, I can go and play around with .NET in the browser. And then we have it compiling in the cloud. This is an experiment that Maria on my team, and she's going to be giving a talk after me on intro to ASP.NET. She works on this team and is the PM for this. And this is an interesting new idea, because if you go over to here and you say, I don't want to install anything, what can we do in the browser? You can go here and run the code. And it's real C# in the browser. And then you can go through and learn this. And then we have now, Maria and her team have embedded this into the docs that I was just singing the praises of. So imagine now going into the docs, finding something about strings or for loops or how link works with strings, and then saying, oh, look, and there's a sample. Oh, and then I can run the sample and modify the sample before I copy-paste it directly into production. Because I know you're going to do that. Then the Azure team has taken that to the next level, too. If you go and take a look at some of their new documentation, you can actually open up an Azure Cloud Shell and actually SSH into Azure machines from within the documentation. So the idea that one could potentially get a 10-minute good experience is absolutely there. So here, I say, go to downloads on the new page. We've got Windows, .NET Core SDK, .NET Full Framework. It knows that I'm on Windows, so it sent me to the Windows instructions. We've also got Linux and Mac. Then you can go and get either the SDK or the runtime. I'm going to a little bit about .NET Core before I start showing you some of the crazy stuff that we're working on. Who is doing .NET Core at work right now? Okay, cool. Who is doing nothing at all with .NET Core and you fear change? Yeah, so he actually stood up with two hands. Like, not maybe he could have been just putting his jacket on, but also could very much fear change. So could be either way. On .NET Core, I could go like this. We'll say, I need another folder. All right, and I'm going to say .NET. And I have my .NET executable. I could say where.NET. We can see where it's located. You notice that it's not in the Windows, et cetera, et cetera. It's in program files. It's somewhere else. A .NET dash dash version. See, we're in .NET 202. .NET dash dash info. Get a little bit more information where we're at. But in an open source world, I want this stuff to work anywhere, right? How many people are running Ubuntu on their Windows machines? How many people had no idea until this second that you could run Ubuntu natively on your Windows? A couple people. This is good. We need this information to get out there. Windows 10, this is not a joke, this is totally legitimate, it's not a machine, I didn't SSH into anything. Windows 10 supports running Linux natively. These are the actual, what are called canaries, from Canonical, the kind that makes Ubuntu, and they got downloaded from the Windows Store. So if you have the Fall Creators Update, you can go and install Fedora and Ubuntu from the Windows Store, and this is actually on Windows. What they do is the Linux kernel is missing, and Windows handles that. But if I do htop, or let's go over to my desktop. Oops. That's that folder that I just made. Okay. Why am I showing you this? There's been a long time over the 10 years that I've been doing open source software, I get excited about a technology, and I go and search for it, and then I find a page that tells me all about that technology. And then I scroll, and it says, here's how you can get set up in just minutes. And then they show me the code, and it starts with a dollar sign. And I go, wah, wah, wah. And then you have this feeling like, I guess I'm not supposed to be here. I guess this isn't for me. This isn't my place, right? If it doesn't say C colon greater than, not for me. Well, now it is for me. This is a full Ubuntu. So I want to point out here, I've got .NET on the left, and then I've got Ubuntu on the right. Oops, .NET dash dash info. 1604 Ubuntu Linux. Windows over here. Notice that I've got 202 on the left, but I have not yet installed 202 on Ubuntu. So as a C-sharp, F-sharp, VB developer, I just became a cross-platform developer. So let's go over here. Can't type dir on Ubuntu. And I'll type .NET new and see some of the stuff that I could potentially do. I can make console apps, I can make unit tests, I can make web apps, I can do all kinds of stuff. So I can go .NET new console. And then I can't run Notepad on Ubuntu, or can I? I can. You see what happened there? I typed the word Notepad and Ubuntu said, well, no, you can go and install, you know, some crap. Or I typed notepad.exe, and because we're running Ubuntu on Windows, it knows that that is the notepad in Windows, and it goes and launches it, and then I'm running it over here. Okay, make a change, .NET run. So now it's going to go and compile that. .NET run implies build, and then I made my change. So I'm having the best, this is actually the year of Linux on the desktop, except the desktop is Windows 10. Isn't that cool? So now think about all the hybrid solutions that I can do. Think about all the different times when I've seen the dollar sign and it wasn't for me and now it is for me. I want to run an ASP.NET application, but I want to run Redis, or I want to run Postgres, and I want to run it against that. Or my company treats Windows developers as second-class citizens, and I want to make everyone happy and be a member of the community. Let's all use Windows. And then, of course, if I want to use VI, I can do that. And if I don't know how to get out of VI, I just close the window. This is the value that Windows is bringing to the Linux community. And with the power of the Intel processor, I can reboot faster than ever. Now I'm back over in Windows. And I'll run my app. Okay? So it really is cross-platform. Okay? I can even do something like this. I'm going to go back over to Ubuntu. And I'm just trying to make a point here. We'll go to the desktop. Make an MVC application, which is more, a little more sophisticated. This includes Razor pages and controllers and all that kind of good stuff. And then we'll run that. Again, .NET run implies the build and then goes and executes that thing. And if I, oops, this is going to tell me a port is open. Address already in use. Come back to that later. This is interesting. I was in Ubuntu running a web app. It said address already in use. Where did I go? I went over to Windows to shut something down. So what does that tell you? There you go. That's localhost 5000 on Windows in popular browser. Talking to Linux, which is also localhost 5000, because localhost is localhost. I shut down a thing that had 5000 open because they're sharing the port ranges to show you how deeply integrated this kind of stuff is, which is pretty cool. So I could go and run my application on Windows and Linux and test it and make sure that it's cross-platform without having to do any weird stuff with virtual machines and whatnot. It is really localhost. Now, let's talk about what I shut down. I've been dancing back and forth between Windows and Linux. But what if I want to use containers? Problem in the last 25 years of my experience in software is configuration management. I have literally been in large banks 12, 15 years ago, watching people remote desktop into production and run beyond compare on a bin full to find out why web 1 is acting different webs 2 and 3 in a painful, painful way, which means you know that this is a problem. You may, in fact, have been guilty of such things. In fact, Jeff Atwood once called that Hanselmaning intuition. I would encourage you not to make that a verb. If your company's deployment process, Explorer Windows on Anna's laptop, and copying production into production, right? See, this guy over here is like, ooh, it's funny because it's true. And then Anna doesn't work here anymore. She went off to be a Node developer because you suck, right? because your DevOps sucks. And like, well, nobody knows how to deploy to production. We always did it on Anna's laptop. What are we going to do now? That's a huge problem. We talk about unit testing. We talk about CI and CD, continuous integration and continuous deployment. We tell you about VSTS, and we tell you about AppFair and all these other challenging things that can go and solve these problems for you. And still you insist on using FileZilla to deploy your source code, right? Here, I'm doing some fun local development on both Windows and Ubuntu just using my Surface. But what if I wanted to have it all containerized? And by a container, we mean literally like a container like you put on a ship, you know? The thing that was great about containers and shipping containers is that they're all the same size. And then all the ships built themselves that way. And then it doesn't matter what you put in the container, and you know that you put the container on the boat goes, and then you pick the container off, and everything is still in the container. The container is the same size and understandable and used by everyone. That technology exists now, and Windows containers exists. Containers is built into, again, Windows 10, and RS3 has a lot of container benefits. So I could potentially, on my Windows 10 Pro, I don't think it's Enterprise, it's just the regular version of Windows 10 everybody has, bring up Windows Server 2016 with full IIS in a container, running full .NET, running WCF, and then talk to another container that is running running SQL Server. Now you might say, well, we've had virtual machines before. This isn't about virtual machines, because virtual machines mean a complete copy of the kernel. It means a complete copy of the operating system. It means 2 30-gig files and using up lots of memory. And you just throw memory and CPU at the problem. A container doesn't have necessarily that level of discreteness, of separation, because it recognizes that the hardware is the hardware. It really runs on the hardware. It doesn't virtualize the CPU. You don't have those slowdowns trying to talk to the disk. So what if we could do what we just did, except in a container, and what would that look like? So you'll notice I said Docker stop here. Let's see if I've got my app. I made a Docker file. Docker is kind of synonymous with containers, the way that like Kleenex is tissue. All right. This is a container manifest. It's a bill of lading, just like when you go to the shipping yards. Don't you all hang out at the shipping yards? I do. There's a label on the outside of all the containers that says, here's what that container is about. This is the manifest for this container, literally. And if you look at the top, it says, well, we're going to build .NET from this image, this well-known image that you can go and get in the Docker hub. And we're going to make a folder, and that'll become our working directory, and we'll copy our app over into that folder. And then I'll run .NET restore and publish on it, which you saw me do before. I just typed .NET run. You're going to type .NET restore, .NET publish. And then in this output folder is now my published app. Then we're going to use a different container to completely ruin this metaphor and extend things too far. Let's say I was going to open up a kitchen in a shipping container. I might want to have the kitchen separate from the dining room. So I would have the kitchen and the food get created in a shipping container. It'd be a super hip thing, because I'm from Portland. It would be a totally obvious Portland thing to have a food cart that was a shipping container. So the metaphor works for me, because I'm from Portland. I would create all of the food in the kitchen in that shipping container, and then we would move it over to the dining room shipping container. Here, we build in one container, Microsoft/.NET 2.0 SDK. Then the results of that are then put into the other container called runtime. You would anticipate then that the runtime one on line 11 would be smaller, because it doesn't have all that kitchen equipment. It doesn't have all the SDK. It doesn't have the compiler. It just has enough to run. And since shipping containers are all about density, right, the whole point of a shipping container is to fit as much stuff as possible, then that makes sense. So then the container that I hand around isn't the one that I used to build it. It's the runtime one, and I could hand you this container and it would just work, right? So here we say from the runtime, I set the working directory, I copy the stuff out of the kitchen on line 14, and then we set up our environment variables for 5000, port 5000. That was the port I got in trouble with earlier. And then we run .NET on that DLL and run it. Make sense? This would give me then reliable builds. So which of my many I have open here? This one here? Is it that one or that one? I know it's that one. This is the build. So I'm going to say doc. I'm still learning this. So I brought, I flew people here to, I didn't really. That'd be cool, though, if you were a presenter. You're such an awesome presenter that you actually had people that you flew here in the front row to yell out when you're about to type something dumb. Jeff and Shane are going to yell, no, don't, just another parentheses. Ah! Then eventually you'll just come up on stage. You'll be like, move, and then fine, go. Docker build, and then I'm going to tag it as shanselman x64. And then I'm going to use that Docker file I just showed you. Okay? Multi-step process. Each line became a step. Okay? So now, if I say Docker images, there's x64. So now, I can do this. This is kind of similar to what you all do now if you're kind of fancy, which is you know, we only do development in virtual machines at our company, right? We all run a laptop that's woefully underpowered because we have no money, and then we run Windows Server slowly in a virtual machine because they won't let us put IIS on our laptops. There's always some BS argument for that, right? And then we remote into the virtual machine on our local machines and do that kind of stuff, right? Here, I'm doing all the work locally. I'm developing whatever makes me happy, Notepad, Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code. I create the container that describes what I want to do, and I say run, and the container isn't a virtual machine, it's a container, it's user mode. It has a port 5000. I can then expose it as something else. Which one's it, inside out or is it outside in? Shane? Outside in. So I can make it 5002 on the outside, 5000 on the inside. So I just said Docker run. There you go. You've seen this before. .NET just ran. So my app is now running in a container. See how it started like that? It didn't start like a virtual machine. It started like that, because this only does one thing. It runs this app. Now it's listening on 5000, right? What? Inside the container is 5000. So localhost 5000 does nothing, because that's inside the container. 5002, though, brings up an ASP.NET app. Okay, and it's still going, even though I hit Control-C. See how I typed docket? I've typed that so many times that I made a batch file called docket.bat. Because it runs Docker. Because I'm either typing .NET or Docker. Why are you feeling bad? That's what we do, right? I don't want to type all those things. If I could change it to D, though, would it mean DIR or docket? Then like D1, D2? It's too complicated. Docket. Docker's cool because every time it makes a container, it takes a famous scientist and an adjective and it merges them together. So we got Mystifying Franklin, or you might get Sassy Einstein. This one's called Mystifying Franklin. So it's still running on that port. So before, it's given a unique ID. So now I need to say Docker stop, and I'm going to give it enough of this ID to be identifiable. So now that's not running anymore. So now I'm dead on that one, okay? Cool. So I've got lots of Docket images that I've been messing around with, including, look at this. Here's an old one called Fancy Pants, coincidentally, that Glenn Condren made 13 months ago. Okay? Could I say Docker run? Can I do this? Can I pick that image ID? So I'm going to run Fancy Pants. Oh, I get to change my ports. Docker stop. Notice how Glenn started up on port 80 internally. I'm going to change it. I'm still going to be on 5002 on the outside, but 80 on the inside. There's the logging. I can still see the logging. So now I've brought up, this is important, so I want you to come on this journey with me. I just brought up a 13-month-old app reliably. That's the point of containers, okay? And we're building container support into Visual Studio, so you'll be able to, you can do this now. You can F5 debug into a Docker container, okay? You can run Windows Server 2016 and full IIS. Having never installed IIS on your laptop and have a full experience. These are currently running Debian, so these are Linux containers that I'm running on. Okay, now, here's where things get weird. And I've got 17 minutes to show you. In this app here, I've got another Docker file that's a little bit more complicated. It looks scary only because, actually, let me do it in Visual Studio Code, because Notepad can only take you so far. I'm going to open that up in VS Code. Then we should get some syntax highlighting. There we go. Notice that I have a different Docker file. I'm using one called ARM, right? Not x64, not x86, but ARM. ARM is Raspberry Pi. Last year, I came and I showed you .NET running on a Raspberry Pi. Did anyone see that? Anyone seen that before? Okay. Some of you, you raised your hands a little weakly. Yeah, we get it. Hello world and a Raspberry Pi. You're not impressed. And I respect that. So I had to think to myself, what could I do to impress you? You, sir, specifically. If I can't impress this very kind gentleman with Hello World on a Raspberry Pi, maybe I could impress him with containerized distributed Hello World on a cluster of Raspberry Pis. Because if you're going to do Hello World, it's got to be on 6 Raspberry Pis running in an array. Seriously, isn't that amazing? All right. So, Raspberry Pis are not Windows machines. I learned that the hard way. They run ARM, ARM 7 or ARM V8, and ARM is a different world. So I need to, and there's also no .NET SDK for Raspberry Pis. There's a runtime. It's not a supported runtime. It's just a runtime. This is a hacker's playground. Don't plan on going into production on this. But people ask for ARM, so we built it on ARM, currently not supported. But if there's no SDK, how can I build stuff? Well, I can build it on Windows for ARM. So when I say .NET publish, I say for this release ID of Linux ARM, right? Runtime ID. So I say publish into that folder the Linux ARM version of this. I'm still using the same, let me close some of these things, here we go. I'm still using the same builder, the same SDK package, except now the runtime package I copied out, I commented out, and now I'm using the ARM version with the dependencies that I need, but everything else is pretty much the same. Okay? But because I have this intense need to impress this gentleman, I need to not just run FileZilla and copy it over to these things. I'm going to use a thing called Kubernetes. And Kubernetes is this great new technology that you can use to make your coworkers feel bad about themselves because they don't know what it is. Right? So when I was going through TSA and they were like, what the hell is that? And I said, oh, well, that's an ARM-based container cluster running Kubernetes and .NET Core on ARM. All right, you're on your way, sir. So Kubernetes is about container orchestration. Orchestration is another one of those PhD words that makes you sound fancy. But it's a good word, though, because it's like the person that runs the orchestra, right? It's whatever that guy's called. Conductor. Thank you. I knew that. They could have called it that, too. So the conductor manages all this. You saw me start a container and then stop a container. But think about container lifecycle management. I've got 6 Raspberry Pis here. I want to deploy this thing into one place, and then I want it to go on as many Pis as is needed. Maybe just 2, maybe 1, maybe 6. I want it to auto-scale, do the right thing. What if one of them gets sick? What if one of the Pis gets sick? I'd like it to be removed from the cluster. What if one of the apps on the Pi gets sick? I'd like that to be removed from the load balancer, right? There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on there. We did all this stuff in the 90s. Remember the day, I'm talking to my old people here. Remember when you learned about what a web farm was? You would fly a consultant in to configure the load balancer. And they would say, it's configured, don't touch it. And they would fly out. And now young people hit a checkbox and they go, ugh, this web farm is taking like a minute to like update. Ugh. And with no respect to the fact that the second page of my resume is now a huge waste of time. Everyone's like, you should have your resume fit on one page. I'm a freaking rock star. My resume is on 3 pages. But now the second page of my resume, which is scaling things in the 90s, is now a slider bar. Attached directly to my credit card. I don't know how Azure did it, but somehow there's a slider bar and money disappears and now I have a 2-page resume. But I'm not bitter. So there's a thing that you use on Kubernetes called kube control. And you would go and install kube control, and then I can talk to it via a proxy. Kube control is complicated, and I won't bother explaining too much, but I will give you a sense of our networking here, briefly. So what I've got is an array of Pis. There's Hansel Boss 1 on the top, then Hansel Workers 1 through 5. The boss coordinates, but also can run stuff, I think. Is that right? So there's 6 of them. There's a hub on the top. I wrote all this up on my blog, so you can buy your own and expense it, which actually I haven't done yet, so I should probably get on that. So the hub on the top is an 8-port hub. I want them all to get IP addresses that are reliable, so I brought a router. This is the smallest router I could bring, and this is passing out IP addresses to all of these Pis. Okay, and I made them static IP addresses or static leases, so they're all reliable and I can count on them. Then I've got my laptop connected here, and then this is connected to the internet here. Make sense? So we're all talking to this router, we're all on the inside, that's the outside, and we're cool. So the IP address of my dongle is here. So this is 168, 192, 168, 105. This is 105, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay? So I believe that Hansel Boss is 170.2. There is a dashboard here. Notice that it says localhost 8001. That's because I have too many DOS boxes open. That's because I ran this kube control and it is proxying traffic between localhost and this array. Within this are a bunch of different services that I have created on a number of different nodes. And I can go and call different things on it. So remember we did hello world before. Let's see what services we have. So I went and installed this great open source functions library called OpenFaaS, F-A-A-S, functions as a service. Okay? You can check this out at openfaas.com. And OpenFaaS is this cloud-native serverless framework. It's kind of like Azure Functions or Lambda, and it's worked on by this very nice gentleman named Alex Ellis, who helped me set this pie up. What he's doing is really interesting. We took that console.write line. See? And I just made a thing called function handler, and instead of public void main, I called it handle. Takes an input, gets back an output. And it says hi dev intersection. And then I used a .NET method that I am conscious of called system.environment.machine name, which you've used before. This is what's nice about this. Even though this is a foreign world for me, I felt like C# kept me grounded. Then I can use his fast CLI and go and build, deploy, and run those things. Now, if we look at the services, I can see that .NET ping is running on this IP address, and I can see that he's got a gateway running on, remember the inside outside stuff? So he's on port 31,112. So I could go 192, 168. That's our boss over here. And I can look at his portal. And I've got a Node app, I've got a Python app, and I've got a .NET Core app, all deployed as functions. All they did was console.writeline. Watch the name of the machine. See how it's changing? That's because it's running on different pies. So I just made a function called doit, and I just said I want distributed containerized doit, and I want it everywhere. Does that make sense? That's serverless computing. You've heard that buzzword, serverless. There's clearly servers, but I'm not sweating them. Did I even call HTTP? I just made a function called doit that took a string and returned a string. That's Azure Functions. That's the whole point. What he's made here is a thing called OpenFaaS, which is an open framework. And by the fact that .NET and C# and F# supports cross-platform, I could play. I could have learned Python or Node. I could have abandoned the technology that I have loved for the last 15 years. But because it was available to me, because .NET is a part of the larger open source community, I got to do that. I got to be involved. I got to go on to another world and learn about how this stuff works, and it just worked. They are our community now, and we are theirs. this is a great serverless computing platform, and now I have a tiny stack of Azure, a little rack that I can simulate a cloud, but miniaturized. This would have been a refrigerator or multiple refrigerators, but it behaves as if it is its own cloud. Now that's OpenFaaS, which lets me do these functions, and you should check that out, and thank you to Alex for helping me out. I could also put an ASP.NET app over there, and that Docker file would be like this. And you can learn these things, so don't worry. This is not too complicated. I learned this without too much effort, just a lot of searching and trial and error. Same kind of stuff we told you before. A Docker file is a Docker file. We're taking containers from Docker, and we are putting them into a container orchestrator. Okay? Then I go and apply those to Kubernetes, and I say, hey, Kubernetes, can you go make me some ASP.NET Core apps? And right now, my ASP.NET Core app is running on workers 1 and 3. So this means I can throw all kinds of work at this thing. I can give it all kinds of experiments and play with all kinds of things. Let's see if we can see that. It is running on port 31120. 31120. Oh, not localhost. 192.168.170.2. There it is. So that is an ASP.NET app running on 2 of these 6 pies. So let's see if we can do something that will get you to clap for me. I don't want your pity claps, though. We're going to do it. No, I don't want your pity. You got to earn it. You got to earn it, friends. ASP.NET Core app. I'm going to say scale to 6 instead of 2. All right? This is where people who have big resumes get mad. Scaled. Let's go over to the dashboard and see what's going on. Okay. Pending 3. Look at this, y'all. Hansel workers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. 3 of them are running. 3 are coming in. It's bringing those containers over. That was manual. What if it could be automatic? Now, I know that you thought about clapping, but you put your hands down. Fine. It's Vegas. I respect that. If I'm going to get applause, we're going to do it the right way. Look at that. So now 5 of the 6 are in there, and 1 more is coming out. .NET is open source. You have choices. You don't have to use Kubernetes on a Pi cluster. That's just fun. But you can. You know this stuff. You know .NET, you know C#, you know F#. You can play with it in a browser at .NET. Check it out, brand new, launched today. You can get started in 10 minutes. You can teach folks at school. You can try out Visual Studio Code. We joked about the install times of Visual Studio 2017. You can install it in 15 minutes if you install the Windows Visual Studio 2017 with a new installer. You can even install them multiple side by side. So I actually have a beta version and a main released version side by side, and they don't affect each other. It is a really, really good time to be a .NET developer. I'm having a lot of fun. Please do check out my blog, and thank you very much. This is the Vegas shot here.